Hello, and as always, welcome back to the Brave Truth Podcast. I'm Tom, and today I'm very excited to say I have an interview with Ashley Carter of Bierstadt Lagerhouse in Denver, Colorado. You may know Bierstadt because of Slow Pour Pills, and it was basically every other picture on Instagram for a while, but they do make other beers, including a Blue Corn Lager that we will talk about, just released last week, last Friday, if you're listening on this Thursday as this is released. That beer, I don't know if that beer is still available, but yeah, if you haven't heard of Bierstadt, then you can go check them out at GABF 2022, because this year's festival will again be virtual, which is probably a good idea. But speaking of festivals, I think there's one more day to get tickets for Hop Culture Magazine's Queer Beer Fest. Official date, I believe, is June 5th. You get 10 different beers from a whole bunch of breweries, a whole day of programming, all kinds of stuff, chefs and artists and all kinds of stuff directly related to and in support of queer-owned breweries, artists, causes, conversations, etc., all supporting the LGBTQ plus community. So on to the interview. There is a little bit of brewery noise. You'll hear the air compressor a couple times, and a little background music, it's just consider it brewery terroir. So you should actually probably be paying extra for the experience. You can Venmo me or Patreon me, but I don't have a Patreon. And I don't think that's a verb or adverb or whatever the fuck it is. I don't know. I'll workshop that one. We'll come back to that joke later. Let's get to the conversation because you didn't come here for the jokes. So Ashley Carter of Bierstadt Lagerhouse. Well, why don't we start with your story and how you got to where you are and with Bierstadt and what got you started down the craft beer lane?
Yeah, I think we probably grew up in this pretty cool world where we aren't like first generation beer drinkers, right? Like as far as like craft beer is concerned, like my parents weren't huge into craft beer or anything, but you know, I distinctly remember in, you know, middle school and stuff like that, going with like all the parents, I played soccer, to like old Chicago and them drinking Fat Tire. Like that's a very, you know, kind of weird thing, you know, they didn't drink Coors or Busch, or my grandpa drank Milwaukee's Best, but you know, that's because that was that generation. But having kind of a generation of beer drinkers ahead of you that are familiar with this craft beer thing, right? So I think that like that kind of ingrained immediately in you that you thought this could be a possibility for a career. So I grew up here in Denver, actually south of Denver in Aurora, and I went away to college into Asheville, North Carolina, which is a very big beer city as well. And I played college there. I played Division I soccer, got my degree in pure mathematics. And I don't know, you know, we were drinking obviously like Busch Light for sure, like copious amounts of it. But at the same time, you know, there was also something else. Like when we turned 21 finally, you know, there was a place called the Asheville Brew and View. And that was just kind of like ingrained in us, which I, like I said, again, another generation before us wouldn't have had that opportunity to just kind of know that there's a place around the corner that makes their own beer. And like, that was pretty cool. We went and played trivia there. We went and saw movies there, whatever. And like this kind of idea of craft beer has kind of always been kind of in the background. When I kind of didn't know what I wanted to do with my life, I coached college soccer for a couple of years and moved back to Colorado. And from there, I was like, okay, what should I do? And I had this kind of love of like science, math, and physical stuff, you know, playing soccer. And I was like, I also really like this other thing. I always like to cook and create. So brewing beer seemed like a pretty, you know, easy tangent from all that. So I built my own homebrew kit, you know, my own like all grain, everything, and started homebrewing. And, you know, kind of like... Sorry, that's my air compressor. Okay. But, you know, from that moment, I think we, you know, I figured out like, can I make a career out of this? Because I didn't really know what I wanted to do with my life. And pursuing an advanced degree in mathematics was originally kind of what I thought I had in mind. But I didn't really want to do that. And so it kind of seemed like a tangible thing. So I kind of just took a job at a brewery, seeing if honestly brewing was something that I'd be interested in. And got actually a job at the homebrew store instead of like as a bartender. And from there, honestly, I got to like see people homebrewing. I got to like I started volunteering in a brewery, and I kind of solidified for me that this is what I wanted to do with my life, is make, be a beer brewer. And since I guess I'd never really had another career doing anything that made any money, it was not a big change like it is for a lot of people.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So.
Yeah. The last interview I did, he was in going through engineering, and, it's like, yeah, you know, it makes a lot of money, or it can, but you know, I really like doing beer. It's like, yeah, you might've taken a little bit of a pay cut changing that.
Yeah. I mean, I could have been an actuary or all these other things, or higher education. And well, I didn't. So, I guess hopefully the beer world's a better place for it.
So I think a lot of people know Beer Stout for the slow pour. What is, I want to know the rest of the story. Like, what is the brew house all about? What are, you know, it's not just the slow pour. You're doing other beers. Mm-hmm. You just put out a corn, blue corn beer.
Tomorrow. Yeah. I'm pretty pumped about that. And I'll tell you all about it. I'm super psyched about it.
Okay.
Yeah, you know, we are known for our pills, which I'm going to have here as soon as I finish my coffee. We do this like crazy overnight brew thing. So I actually brewed all night overnight, and then like packaged beer all day today. So I kind of remembered that I didn't have coffee.
Yeah, as you say, so hence the coffee.
Like the right time right now. Yeah, hence the coffee. So, you know, slow pour, honestly, the genesis for this whole thing, obviously encompasses like a ton of stuff, but basically what it boils down to is lager, is making lager. And that's why we called ourselves a lager house. And I had worked at a couple other places before that had made, you know, other things, or had been focused on German styles, not necessarily just lager. And when I got the opportunity to do it ourselves, it seemed like trying to focus on this like one thing was really like true to what we wanted to do, like the simplicity of it all. So we make three beers year round, and that's Slow Pour Pils, Helles, and Dunkel. And those three beers, honestly, we are 3 malt, 2 hop, 1 yeast brewery. And honestly, what we were trying to do was, thinking about lager yeast in general, is it doesn't seem very diverse. And I would probably say it's not extraordinarily diverse. But what I would say is there's a lot of different things that can be made with it. And I love the idea of making lager and doing a bunch of things with this one single yeast, and knowing as much as possible about a single type of yeast, or knowing a big part of this really small piece of the puzzle. And that was kind of like the whole thing about these beers, is not really wanting to conform to just making only German styles, which I know seems like we're even more conformed than that, but I don't feel that way. And now that we're able to do a couple of these other beers and stuff like that using lager yeast, I don't feel tied down, or I don't feel like making lager only is a detriment. Whereas I feel like if we like focus solely on German style, that would be like, right now I don't make Maibock anymore because nobody drinks it. And I don't really love Maibock. So why would I want to, you know, put myself in a pigeonhole where I felt like I had to make Maibock during May, right? So like, I think that doing lager only is a big flexibility, actually. So I don't know if that answered the question entirely, but you know, it's kind of this whole idea of just making and using techniques to make, you know, very like simple style beers.
You like
the brew house too. Go ahead though.
I was going to ask, being, you said 3 malt, 2 hop, 1 yeast. Mm-hmm. Do you like to play around with the different, you know, different hopping rates or different percentages in the grist, or fermenting at different temperatures, doing that kind of stuff? Do you like to play with that and see where you can take things, or are you more like you have your recipes dialed in and that's what you want to go with?
More the latter of those two things. Okay. Like, a lot of people ask if we have like a pilot system or whatever, and the answer is no. I feel very comfortable in the way that we make beer and fermentation, etc. It doesn't mean I can't be taught something new, or if I read about something, I don't want to try it or whatever. And usually I save that for maybe some seasonal stuff. But the way that we make our three core beers has been pretty established and pretty dead set. You know, obviously when hops change and things like that, when pH changes and do we, you know, you always have to kind of go back. You can kind of get stuck in a rut a little bit, and you always have to go back to kind of your original reading material and other reading material and decide if, you know, occasionally decide if that's how you want to keep making beer, if you want to keep making beer the same way, and if it still, you know, translates itself in the way that you want to in the beer. But I don't ever drink our beers and wish there was something else about them. We make beer a certain way. We've made beer a long time. It doesn't take a lot, honestly, to dial in a recipe. And so I don't, honestly, we won't play around with that much anymore. We've been doing it for a long time. There's a cadence to it. There's things that you understand about brewing. There's things that I talk about, obviously, with friends and other colleagues that I find interesting. And, you know, some of those things we implement maybe slowly, but there's never like a lot of like playing around per se.
Okay.
As far as the brew house is concerned, so we bought a brew house from Germany. It's from 1932. It came from a town called Ammendorf. It's about 18 kilometers southwest of Nuremberg. It's copper. It's beautiful. It's old. It's leaky. It's amazing. It's got its quirks. But I wouldn't have it any other way. It is designed to make the kind of beer that we make, which is like lager. It's meant to do decoction, right? Like that's not a weird thing on it. It's meant to do the things that we want to do with it. And hot side is, you know, a big part, but it's in the grand scheme of things, a very small part of the whole puzzle about making lager. It's just one more step that we have, one more thing that we have, one more little tool that we have.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was going to ask, you mentioned decoction. I was going to ask if you do decoction brewing, and if you do, like double or single or triple, or if you're crazy or have, you just said you spent all night brewing overnight. Mm-hmm. So do you do a lot of decoction brewing or on those three main beers?
We do decoction on everything. So a okay. single on the pills and double on pretty much everything else, okay. Including seasonals. When we do overnight, it's because we do triple batches. So we have about a 30-ish when it's all said and done, barrel brewery, and I have 100 barrel fermenters. So in order to keep, I want to get all the wort into the fermenter as quick as possible with the yeast. We don't really want it to start fermenting before we've got all our wort in there. So we do it back to back to back in order to make sure that happens. So we'll start at, you know, 6 or 7 in the morning, and I got kind of done around like 11:30, but then I had to like do other brewery stuff like kegging and such. So that's only about once every 2 weeks, which is nice. But yes, we do decoction. So mashing is okay. About a 3.5 hour. Each mash is about 3.5 hours.
Okay. Being a system from, you said, I think 1932, I was going to ask if you had multiple kettles so you could make things a little easier to decoct.
We have kind of a, what we would consider, I guess people would consider, a three vessel system. So we have a mash kettle. So that's actually where the mash, the malt and the water are mixed together. And it's a joint vessel because we'll move the mash up to the louder tun. And that's actually where the separation occurs. So the mash kettle is just for mash. Then we'll decoct. So we'll take 2/3 of that mash, put it up into the lauter tun, and boil down in the bottom vessel. So they're actually on two separate levels. And then when it's done boiling, we'll add that boiling liquid back up to the mash. So it raises the temperature of the entire mash. And then that's where the separation occurs. That's where the plates are. And so it'll run back off into the kettle. To actually boil back where we were mashing after we've cleaned it out and everything. And then we have a separate whirlpool. So as soon as that thing's done boiling and hits the whirlpool, we'll start mashing in the next batch.
But still a lot of time going into that process.
It's about 8 hours roughly from mash in to out of the kettle into the whirlpool.
Okay.
So that's actually not too bad considering, all things considered.
And when you, what made you go with 100 barrel fermenters? I mean, you had to have seen the triple batches coming, right?
Weirdly, we bought both things from Germany on the same trip at separate breweries.
Okay.
So the cellar is from a town called Michaels Neukirchen, which is outside the Czech border, I believe. A very small, sleepy town. But fermenters were in excellent shape, and the deal on them was really good. And they're a different shape fermenter. They're not a cylinder conical like everybody's used to. And then when we got the Brewhausik, we knew that triples were in our future. But I brew only, honestly, I only have to really usually, there's freakish times like right now where I'm brewing almost every week, but usually I only have to brew once every 2 weeks. So it's not crazy, you know, it's a day and a half's worth of work.
Yeah.
And then I have almost 100 barrels worth of beer in a tank.
Yeah. Is that, are things picking up, or are you saying crazy times right now? Is that just as things are starting to lift and people want to go out and you can go buy beer at the restaurant or whatever?
Yeah, it's quite a bit of that. Also because of the way we make beer, lager, you know, we're basically 8 to 10 weeks behind or ahead, whatever way you want to look at it. When they opened us back up in January and then opened us up again, so here in Colorado, they kind of like opened indoor dining back up in January a little bit at 25% capacity or 50 people. And we have two areas that can hold 50 people. And then they opened us up further like a couple months later. But we didn't know that was going to happen. So all that beer that I had just kind of lagering, I went to package it pretty quickly, but then had to refill all those tanks. So not really knowing how that was going to happen. I've been kind of on my heels for a minute, but I finally feel semi caught up, and April was a wild month. So I'm looking forward to being over.
Yeah. It hasn't exactly been predicting 2 months out on which way society is trending.
And, yeah. I live 3 months in the future. I try to anyways. So, yeah. You know, this corn beer. So we're actually about to release this corn beer. You asked about it earlier, which I'm super stoked about. And it's one of the things about being happy we don't make lager only, or that we make lager only, we don't make just German styles, because at first we made Maibach a few times for probably the first 3 years, but people don't get that beer, and it, while tasty, it's just not my favorite style, you know. So last year we made this decision pre-pandemic, because we're always brewing in the future, that we would make a collaboration with a bar called Finn's Manor that has big ties to Oaxaca. They import a lot of mezcal. The brewer, or the owner over there, Tom, he's A+ people. They go through about 6 kegs of our week, or of our beer every week. It just seemed like a cool thing. I'm not usually one to do a collab with a bar. But when he kind of brought this up, this idea of using like heirloom corn to make a beer with, and we had made a rice beer before, I was like, you know what? That actually sounds like pretty interesting. Like, I don't want to call it Mexican lager, because I think Mexican lager is something else. I also think it's kind of like sad Hellas, personally. People make it instead of making Hellas, and not very well. So I was like, yeah, let's try this. So we found this company called Mossienda, which imports into LA, and they import a bunch of heirloom Oaxacan corn. So we got this whole corn that we milled and ground ourselves, and then did a cereal mash on it with some 6-row, and then used our regular Barcapils malt that we normally use, and fermented it with our house yeast. And it's fly. Like, it's fucking dope. Like, I'm so pumped about it. Like, last year I was pumped about it, and we had to release it mid pandemic. So that kind of sucked, you know. In the beginning of May is when we released it. And this year we decided to go ahead and make a triple batch of it. So I only made 30 barrels, but last year we'll have 80 or so this year. And I'm so stoked about it. I filtered it on Monday, kegged it today, about to can it tomorrow. And we're going to deliver it to bars tomorrow right off the canning line. So how's that, Lagunitas same day IPA, right? So I'm very excited to, like, it's awesome. Like, put a lime in it, like, drink it. It's so refreshing. It's an incredible beer. Like, I'm so pumped to do it, and I can't wait to make it again next year. Like, that's how stoked I am about it.
Yeah. And you mentioned not doing solely German styles. Mm-hmm. And obviously corn is not going to be Reinheitsgebot compliant. So is the Reinheitsgebot something you try to stick to, or is that just kind of a, you know, it's, there are certainly exceptions that have been made over time, and how it all started. There's a whole political story there, but Is it something that you normally try to stick with?
So on my business card, if you ever see it, I call myself the Ryan Heitzke bitch. So I do believe in the Ryan Heitzke boat, very much so. And when we make German styles, we stick as close to it as possible. Yeast, malt, hops, and water. Try to naturally carbonate. Technically, even CO2 isn't allowed, adding extraneous CO2. So I would never call ourselves Ryan Heitzke boat because I do have to touch up everything usually, at least a little bit. But we do operate that way for all of our all malt beers. It's a little different, obviously, if we don't make something all malt, because that's not really in the Ryan Heitzke boat. But we follow everything else pretty exacting. I don't add anything else. There's no kettle finings. There's no firm cap. There's no extra added whatever. Like, it's made, you know, with just those four ingredients. And we take, I think that's, who was it just recently? Plant-based beer, right? I guess that's what we're all making these days. So yeah, we're making plant-based beer, but yeah, I try to stick to it as much as possible. I don't look at it as a, hindrance, you know. Again, I can make other things if I want to, but under the lager category, I don't look at it as a hindrance. I look at it as just a guideline as far as how we want to make beer. I don't know why beer needs necessarily anything else. Again, using like another, you know, grain to get sugar from is one thing. We're using corn or we're using rice or whatever it is. But to actually use anything else, I don't see that there's anything needed to be, and I don't consider it. I think it was Sam Calagione said he considers it artist suppression, and I don't know. If you don't have anything to be anti, like, you're welcome for the Ryan Heitzke boat, or else you wouldn't have anything to be anti, right? Yeah. Like, you have to have an opposition in order to be the opposition.
I wonder if so, I don't I'll know if it. Dogfish Head has ever made a Ryan Heitzke boat compliant beer.
I don't know, but they do call their Sea Quench, that like lime salt thing, cucumber thing, a Kolsch, and I don't see why. If you're so anti,
yeah, I'm pretty sure it says that on the can.
Yeah, it does.
That's
like, if you're so anti this German style, then stop leaning on it.
yeah,
because nobody knows what a Kolsch is, anyways.
Yeah, and Kolsch has the I can't remember the initials, but it's supposed to be a protected name.
It is from Cologne.
Yeah, and so that's interesting that he would, like, when people call something Kolsch a Kolsch style. Yeah, I was gonna say, even the Kolsch versus Kolsch style, is even that's a whole argument that it's pretty much one way or the other.
Mm-hmm. I'm on the beer, by the way. Got my coffee down. So cheers.
Cheers. Well, speaking of corn beers, that's what I'm drinking now. Is this a trend that's coming, the corn beers? Is it? I know there's been a few, but I don't think it's totally caught on yet, the way that, you know, blue raspberry milkshake stuff.
Blue raspberry, my favorite style. You know, you can only harvest those above the Arctic Circle during two weeks of the year.
That sounds about right.
I don't know. I have no idea what trends are. I kind of just make what we want to make. I couldn't tell you what's trending, what's not trending. I suppose, you know, as people kind of get into, now that craft brewers have decided that it's acceptable to now put other things in beer, the things that they railed against so hard, I think we're going to see a lot more of these things. You know, at some point, a lot of craft brewers thought it was unacceptable, right? Like, don't use cheap things like corn and rice, like, which are not cheap, to be honest with you. And they kind of really railed against big beer. I actually just read an article today, I want to say from, I can't remember. God, I was just reading one about the same thing, about how we've kind of like eaten our own tail. And that's part of it. Like, there's nothing wrong with using, it's like just a carbohydrate, right? Like, to make beer out of. Like, if you'll make it with s'mores, I don't see why corn and rice are such a far, you know, so far out there. So I don't know if it's so much of a trend as is finally understanding that some of these things, you know, they lighten the body, like rice and corn, you know, they put space in between the beer. I don't know how else to put it. I heard somebody say it like that, and I thought it was a really interesting way to put it. They put space in the beer. They lighten the body of it. So these things are like, they're not bad things to use. There's not a, an inherently bad carbohydrate, you know? They're just other ways or other flavors or other other sugars that help you create, you know, a beverage to taste the way you want it to taste, I guess.
Yeah, and the point of them, you know, being railed against and associated with big beer and everything, like, it's, I think, pretty widely proven that when, you know, Budweiser and the big people started using rice and corn, whatever, like, however many decades ago, it wasn't because it was cheaper, because it was more expensive. And yep. It was about the beer and the body and the color and all that. It wasn't about saving money. It was very much not about saving money. So yeah, it is interesting how it can be kind of flipped on its head like that. And I don't know. I like the different styles like that, that provide something different and not just throwing whatever crap you have. Like, you bought a bunch of Captain Crunch or whatever and throw some marshmallows in. And if that's okay, then I don't see why corn and rice.
Corn and rice are such bad guys, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And there's a lot more history with corn and rice than chocolate bars and s'mores and marshmallows.
Exactly. So yeah, I mean, I just think it's, again, we're rediscovering these things that have been discovered a long time ago. I didn't reinvent any wheel. I wanted to do with this corn beer, we wanted to use a really interesting, cool ingredient. Like, these corn that we use, they're gorgeous. They're, you know, like that big around. They're purple and blue, and they're amazing. And I made homemade tortillas out of them and everything. Like, they're amazing ingredient. I think trying to highlight this amazing ingredient is kind of what we were trying to do, more so than like lighten the body of it up or anything. And just make a beer that's like, just says like summer. And now that hopefully we're all vaccinated, like, it says, let's fucking ride. Like, you know, yeah. let's get out there. Let's get back to normal. And hopefully, you know, this will be like probably the first of things that we get to do and really hang out with people. And I'm looking forward to the release tomorrow. I think we could fly through this beer pretty quickly, which is odd for us. We're not really a hype brewery. I don't know if you know this. We make three beers.
you mentioned the different colors. Does that affect, or did it affect the color of the beer, or is that something that gets stripped out in the process of lagering it?
Weirdly, during the process, so it's about 40% corn. So it's a pretty heavy handed amount of corn. The beer, the wort had a pink hue to it, like a pink purple hue to it. And even before filter, it had a pink hue to it. It's way harder to tell right now, but I really do feel like when you put it up side by side and you like look through it, it's not quite yellow. Like, I just like to call it off yellow. Like, it's perfectly bright because we do filter everything, but it is definitely like off yellow. That's the only way I can put it. It's not quite pink, but you can almost catch a pink hue in the right lighting. Okay. So you'd have to really look for it. I would never say it looks pink, but it doesn't look like yellow. It doesn't look golden. It's different.
For the whole style thing, lager breweries, they're definitely becoming more popular. You said you're not a hype brewery, but I felt like for 2 months, everyone who had a slow pour was posting it on Instagram. And
that might be true.
But I think the whole craft world is kind of fully, maybe not fully, but much more embraced the, like, this lager redemption, that it's not just, you know, beer in a can that's shit quality and the big guys and mass produce and all that. There's a lot more to it. There's a lot of breweries now that are doing it in a really artisan, authentic way. Do you think that consumers have finally caught on to, you know, what is pretty widely regarded as brewers' favorite styles and drinking beers? Or is this like looking back on black IPA? And you're like, oh, it had a nice run.
Well, I think what people forget is that lager is on like a 150-year winning streak. Like, It just is. Like, 9 out of 10 people are still drinking lager. Like, it's, we could maybe call it a craft resurgence, and I might go with that. But honestly, for the most part, it's not gone away at all. I think as far as like the craft resurgence of it, I don't know. I don't think it'll obviously be like Black IPA, because I don't see people, you know, even at Black IPA's heightened form, nobody ever had more than one on tap, right? And now you're seeing people with, you know, Vienna, a Japanese lager, you know, a Helles, what is it called? Italian Pils, you know, all on their same draft list. But what I would say is that I think as far as like the craft resurgence goes, I think people are seeing, and I hopefully, this is what I hope to. So like it's simultaneously what I'm seeing and also what I hope to continue to see is that people keep taking it seriously. And they don't start treating it like what I've seen, you know, Blonde Ale and Kolsch become, or that word Kolsch become. It's just something on their list for people who don't like beer, right? And eventually people will graduate from drinking their pale lager and finally drink double IPA. Like, I think that that's the wrong way to look at these beers, as kind of like starter beers. There's a brewery not so far from here. I guess it's a decent ways, but it's in Colorado. And, you know, they have this like list of the ways that they like novice beers, right? And this like Pils is a novice beer. And I kind of think we have to stop, we have to get away from like a terminology as craft brewers if we want people to keep drinking a lot of these, because you can sell a lot of it. And because not, you can't drink three sours. You can't drink three double IPAs. You just can't. Like, that's just not what's going to happen. People hate the word session too. You know, you put the word session before IPA, and you can guarantee that's going to be, you know, sitting on your wall for a long time. So, you know, lager has just become like semi-approachable, and hopefully people keep taking it seriously and keep giving it the, you know, what it's due, and stop toying with it like pastry lager or whatever. Like, stop doing that. It's not lager anymore.
Is that a thing?
I saw it one time. Of course I did.
Oh God.
But to see, like, if we can keep, if we can keep pushing the level higher, like I think we've done with IPAs now, you know, there are less and less of these like 1990s style, you know, IPA that are super caramelly and, you know, are chock full of like Chinook hops. And I think we've really raised the level overall of IPA in every brewery. And I think I'd like to see that with lager. And I don't know if it's quite there yet.
Yeah. Session, it just has like a weird,
our beers go to die.
Yeah, it's got this weird connotation. And I remember talking to Chris at Notch, and they created a whole separate line for anything above 4.5%, and which often includes Pilsner. But they also do like pale ale, and I can't remember what else they do, but they draw that line and they're like, well, everything under this is like kind of traditionally a session beer. But people will hear the word session and it's like a, like, oh, it's a light beer. It tastes like there's less flavor. And now with the 100-calorie thing coming around, it's like, oh, well, I can drink this, and, or like the seltzer that's 95 calories or whatever. And it's like, if you don't want the calories, just drink less beer, like have 2 instead of 7. But the whole session.
Yeah, because I'm going to drink like 7 of those. Right? You're like, oh, it's just 95 calories. We'll just have another one.
Yeah. It's like eating low calorie food. It's like, oh, I can eat more because it's low calorie.
Yeah. Like, and then you've eaten twice as much.
Yeah. It's like the math still adds up. I'm not good at math. I will say that till the day I die, but it adds up. So yeah, I don't know where
weird,
I started there.
Number. No, it's just a weird, yeah. The idea of session. I don't know where it came from, I guess to delineate, you know, something, I guess. But I honestly, I wouldn't say that all beers should be session beers. And I don't mean that from an alcohol content standpoint. I think that from a, you should be able to have 2 of almost anything you drink, if not more. Like, if you don't want to have another one, I think, like, when you look at especially like lager styles and traditionally German, if we're going to like start there, like even Doppelbock should be, you know, drinkable enough to have 2 of them. Even if you maybe shouldn't because of the alcohol content, you should feel like at the end of the first one, you're not tired out by it, you know, that you could have another one. So when I think of a session beer, I don't necessarily think of it as in terms of like alcohol, and I would never call anything a session beer, but I think of it as in terms of like, could you have a drinking session with that beer? And I think that's what we're always trying to aim, is like imminently drinkable in all the beers that we make, even if they're higher in alcohol content. Like, you should want two of them, whatever that serving size is, at least.
Yeah, I remember a few years ago seeing the first time seeing a quadruple IPA on the menu. I was like, I don't know what this is, but I'm gonna
barley wine.
Yeah, essentially. And I think it was like 14%, and I didn't really know what I was getting into, and I had one, and I was definitely not having the second. And I was just like, at the end of it, like, I love hops, but I'm drinking a corn lager right now, and like anything over 8%, and it just gets to be that the hop overload, to, you know, I feel like half the time it's to just overwhelm any malt sweetness or any malty flavors at all.
There's no balance at all. And I think you can have balance even in big beers. I think even some of the best, you know, barley wines and stuff like that, and imperial stouts have some semblance of balance in there, you know. There's a roast character. There's enough hop to keep you, you know, interested. It's not so sweet and cloying that you need an insulin shot afterwards. Like, there is, even in a 10% beer, there is a ability to be, you know, like, drinkable. Again, should you drink two? Maybe not. But should you, at the end of it, go like, I'm tired of that beer, I do not want any more? Like, I like to think of it like, I could, you know, that tastes pretty good, I would have another one, you know. Or rich, like a steak, you know, like it didn't, I'm not tired of it, I just, it's, I don't need any more.
Yeah, there's definitely those beers that are now it's like, all right, I tasted an ounce of that beer and I'm good for like 6 years.
It's the competition mentality a little bit, in my opinion, is this idea that the first sip has to wow you. And I think we get too much into this like instant gratification. It's the untapped culture that the first time you drink something, or the first moment that you drink it, you have to have some initial reaction about it. And the kind of beers that, you know, we make, and honestly, the kind of beers they make at Notch and some of the other breweries, it's built on this idea of drinking a whole one before you kind of have an opinion about it. And I think we should get into that habit more often as beer drinkers, and as the consumer, if we can get our consumers to drink an entire one before they are, you know, interested in going to go rate it, I think the beer community on whole will be a better place. It'll get less of this like wild stuff out there that people just have to have one of, and you get more people that are, you know, thoughtful about the kind of beer they're drinking, or thoughtful about the beverage, or even the food that they're, you know, hot food is delicious, but if it's so spicy, you can't have any more of it. It's the same idea. Like, the idea that you can have enough of it, or, you know, pair it in a way that you can have enough of it to develop a fully formed opinion besides it's hoppy or it's sweet, you know?
Yeah. I like spicy food, but there's
so do I.
That point. Yeah. There's,
you know,
that
goes well
where...
with spicy food. Pills go real well with spicy food.
And there's that point where in beer too, with maybe a top, or maybe it's no hops and it's just real sweet or something. But with spicy food, there's that point where it's like, all right, there's no flavor anymore, because I can't feel my tongue, and anything else is like, any other flavors are just, I'm not getting it, because I just ate, you know, two scorpion peppers or whatever for the experience. And like, I used to like sampling beers and ordering based off of a, you know, a 2 ounce sample. And now it's like, maybe that beer changes exponentially in 10 degrees, you know, or in 20 minutes or whatever. And,
or just as you have to drink a whole one of them.
Yeah. Now it's like, I'd rather have the pint. And if, you know, if I like it at the end of it, then cool. If I don't, then whatever, but it's a whole different experience than just like tasting whatever, checking it on Untappd. And, you know, getting your badge for, I don't know, there's probably like sour milkshake IPA badges on Untappd now, but
that sounds sour milk. Just put it like that.
Yeah. When it went to milkshake IPAs, I was like, ah, shit, this is not good.
The most offensive thing about that is calling it an IPA.
Yeah. I, the milkshake IPA, and then the sour IPA, and then the combination, and then put it in a slushy machine and it's, you know, like neon green. I'm like, all right, this isn't even beer.
No, it's not beer.
And then reduce the calories and call it a seltzer. So I don't know where we are anymore.
Yeah, you definitely, it's kind of, you've gone through the whole process.
Yeah, I don't have any opinions about this though.
Me either, don't worry. I'm opinionless.
For you, when you're drinking beer, if you're at another place, another brewery, or, you know, out to dinner or whatever, do you like drinking other stuff, or is it, I like the hashtag lager hard. I really like that. is it lager all the time for you?
Wow. So there's this kind of like inside running joke amongst my friends is that I don't like beer, which is very untrue because I drink a lot of it. I drink a lot of lager. I drink a lot of our beer. Honestly, to be honest, we don't go out that much, especially pandemic, but even before then, we have a lot of accounts. So I don't know if you know much about how we sell our beer around here, but basically when we sell our beer to somebody, to a outside account, I hate to say require them, but in order to put our beer on tap, you have to put it in the glass. So when you get a Pils, you get it in the Pils glass, and you get a Helles, you get it in a Helles glass. And so I kind of like take these as very kind of like sacred relationships. And we try to really build these relationships. Like, so honestly, most of the time we got to eat, it's to someplace our beer is on tap at, because I really want to continue to push this idea of the relationship is like, this is where, you know, it's kind of the old school model of like, you get your bread from here, or you get, you know, and everybody kind of exchanges that way. And so I try to go places that have supported us. Outside of that, you know, there are a bunch of breweries around town that I really love that make things that I don't make. And I am so appreciative of them. And for the most part, most of them make pretty good lager too. It's probably not a coincidence that we're friends because they make really excellent beer. I don't have to lie to their face, and I try not to lie to my friends' faces, you know? So there are, I do love, a secret love of mine is coffee stout without lactose and like regular strength or coffee porter. Like, I absolutely love coffee beer. Like, I'm obsessed. So they always know that. I really like IPA, West Coast IPA, like bitter, bright, clean, clear. Comrade makes Superpower. Westbound and Down makes excellent IPA. Like, these places, Cannonball Creek, like, these places are phenomenal. My friends that make, you know, a plethora of styles make some lager, Vienna, or things that I don't make, Schwarzbier, that are amazing. I have a good friend named Brett that makes a fruit beer, which is not usually up my alley, but he makes a beer called Rise Against the Machine. His brewery is called Little Machine, and he's won a bunch of medals with it. And it is an incredible fruit beer. There's nothing like it, in my opinion, out there that you can buy anywhere. It's perfectly bright. It's bright purple. It's not tart. It's like fruit tart to it. Super dry, not sweet at all. And it's got just like this beautiful pink foam on it. And there's not a beer like it. I've never had a beer like it. It's, you know, 4.5% and just supremely drinkable. So I like to look at what people do well, and I like to drink that. The only kind of beer I can say I rarely, if ever, drink and try not to drink is like Belgian quad and double and Belgian single. I don't love it. Like, if there's a Duvel or Oval or any of those things, like, yeah, I'll drink it. But if you invite me to go drink a Belgian blonde, like, if they have a Saison, yeah, I'm totally down. Like, Saison DuPont, fantastic. If you get a nice table Saison, like, I'm all down for it. But Belgian beer in general has just not been, I don't know. It's like, it's that dark dates, cherries,
yeah,
like those kind of things. Like, I don't love them. And I don't like the way they make me feel either. Like wine, okay. I don't like that either. I do drink scotch though, quite a bit of that.
Okay. Yeah, for me it's beer and scotch, maybe a little mezcal or rum in there.
Yeah, all right, see?
One thing I was thinking, when you said put the beer in the glass, you're talking the proper glassware, not just like a dirty shaker pint.
I should be drinking out of the glass, but I was trying to get on here quickly for you, so I just grabbed this out of the cooler.
I won't tell anybody.
That's all right. I give people a hard time, and I just, once you put beer in cans, I just don't care anymore, you know? No, we make them put it in. So like pills in the pills glass, Hellas, we have a mug for, that's the glass, our glass that they, have to put it in. Like, again, I don't like to say have to, we just won't sell them beer if they don't. And yeah. if they don't want to, that's cool too. I mean, not every relationship or, you know, we can't sell beer everywhere. So you try to find the people that believe the same things you do.
Yeah. And that is, it is, I mean, to the point of Belgian beers, like every brewery has a,
I love that.
You know, the proper glass for its own, for every different beer that it makes. Mm-hmm. And there's a big, big impact that the glass has on the beer from, you know, color to aroma to everything else. But, yeah, it's a, I didn't know that that was a thing you guys do. So that's, I think that's interesting.
We've done it
and
since
not
day
just,
one.
Yeah.
Which I think, you know, at first it was difficult. We had some pushback, not necessarily from a lot of accounts, but we had some pushback from our salesperson, who's not our salesperson anymore, which is probably partially for this reason, but okay, get them to get the beer and then we'll do that. And I have always been of the opinion that shows that you're not really serious about it, I guess. Like, okay, we do this little step and then we take this other step after that. Like, why should people do that after that, right?
Yeah.
Like, I think you have to go with that from the beginning because it's not a gimmick to us. It is, of course, like, I can't ignore the fact that it's definitely some branding, you know? So when you get that glass a couple of times, and people, we have this idea that beer drinkers know what they're drinking all the time, and they don't. For the most part, you have your untapped, you know, your kind of beer nerd style, or your people who are like going brewery to brewery and trying to find out whatever, but your regular person who sits down as a bar, like for the most part, like doesn't know what they're drinking all the time. And so that is part of the branding. That is part of, like, you know, ordering that beer again somewhere else and then realizing what they're drinking. Like, that's all part of it. But doing that from the beginning was a big expense for us, having to have all those glasses on hand. We do have to charge for the glasses. It's state law, and they do pay for it, but it's literally the best decision we ever made because I got tired. I mean, I've been a brewer. This is my 10th year as a professional brewer. I got tired of going out to places for beer that I worked really hard to make. We thought about, you know, from top to bottom, from head to toe, and get it served in a dirty shaker pint with no foam. You know, it becomes depressing. Like, why are we taking all this and not expecting something out of it? You know, you can go anywhere and get Stella in a Stella glass. You can go anywhere almost and get Guinness in a Guinness glass. Like, why can't we expect that level of care and respect from beers that are locally made, that you can know the person who made them? Like, I don't understand why something so foreign or something that isn't in your backyard is just seems so much more amazing or so much more unattainable or so much more this, that, or the other. And so it was just part of trying to get people to take beer more seriously. Our stated goal at the beginning of this whole thing was to change beer culture. And I don't know that we've done as good a job as we'd like to by now, but I do think we have done something, is changing beer culture, changing the way beer is served. And it's a big goal, but I think you have to have, you know, something.
Yeah. When I go to a place, and get, you know, whatever X style and comes in, you know, the right glass or somewhat the right shaped glass instead of a shaker pint, I'm like, all right, they're, you know, they're paying some attention. And when you get that, you know, beer with, like, that, it's just got the ring of bubbles just around the lip and it's filled all the way to the top and there's no other foam. And it's a, you know, it's a shaker pint that's, you can see they stack them and they've got the little chips on the inside. I'm like, all right, it just changes the entire experience, whether or not it's a good beer in that glass at the end of the day. It just, from the visual aspect of it, that just changes everything right off the bat.
Especially if it's like a $7 beer, right? Like, you wouldn't pay $30 for a steak and a dog bowl, right? Like, I mean, it's part of the whole thing. I think the thing that really, like, when we were thinking about this was so prominent out there is, why do these places that have a shaker pint have a red wine glass and a white wine glass and a Moscow Mule glass. Like, that is what I can't understand. It's not like they serve wine in a shaker pint, right? Or even a cheater shaker pint or whatever. Why don't you just fill that shaker pint half full? Like, they're harder to clean. Like, they're like, why can you have a wine glass or two wine glasses and a champagne glass and a cocktail glass, but yet you think that beer can all go in this one glass? I think that is really what started to make me, you know, Bill and I think about, like, this has, something has got to change. Like, are we a beer culture or not? Why has beer come so little way in its craft beer, especially in such a lifetime? I mean, look at any ad, look at any movie, watch a movie where they serve beer. You can see it's, at least even if it's in a shaker pint, it's clean and it has foam on it. Like, the bar is so low. Like, even if it's a shaker pint, can it get it, can it be clean and can it have a foam on it? That's it. Like, those two things, like, the bar is low and we still haven't, still haven't gotten over that hurdle. And that's, like, yeah, super disappointing.
Yeah. I think of, you know, comparing beer to wine and in like the food world, I think that's started to come along with, you know, with like Garrett Oliver, like Brewmaster's Table and different stuff like that. And it's like, well, beer has a lot more uses than just, you
it's
know,
so much
get
more,
drunk. Yeah.
Yeah. It's so much more. It's a better pair for anything. Like, wine is just sour. Like, I don't care what anybody says. It's just sour. Like, it doesn't go that well with food. It's always competing with food, where I think beer actually pairs particularly well with food. You know, we like trying to push those pairings to limit, trying to push those pairings forward, trying to get people to take this stuff seriously. But the thing that kills me a little bit is some of the best restaurants, some of the nicest restaurants are the biggest faller downers, like however you want to put it. Like, we're at this restaurant, it's kind of a chain, but it's called Fogo de Chao. And it's like a Brazilian steakhouse restaurant, right? And you can go there and they have caipirinhas, they have red wine, white wine, you know, you can get all the gambit there. And we serve our beer there. And they do serve it under glass for $8. Like, we serve ours, it's $4 here. You know what I mean? Like, $8. They serve it for $8. And it was the filthiest glass I've ever seen. And it was our glass. And you're like, this is a really nice restaurant that has like a sommelier, you know, a company-wide sommelier and all these things, and still a really nice restaurant can't get this right. And I can't understand why that is. How, it's still just kind of a look down upon beverage, and I don't understand really why that is.
Yeah. Well, totally separate note. Just making me think of the glassware. What size?
I'm drinking out of a can, by the way. Don't worry. The irony is not lost on me. I get it.
What size glassware? What are they, like half liter mugs, or what are the, what is the slow pour? What size is that?
Slow pour is a 0.3.
Okay.
So it is a 10.3 ounce glass.
Okay.
So small. So the point of a glass that size for pils is it's very delicate. It's got the stem on it. Basically the idea is so that it doesn't change temperature from top to bottom. So it stays, maintains its same temperature. The way we pour it, which we do slow pour, which is also the name of the beer, dissipates the foam out. And also it kind of, the way the shape of the glass is to kind of put all those aromatics right up into your nose, you know, so it kind of tickles your nose. So then the rest of our glasses are half liters. I love a mug for the Helles. It's not very traditional. Usually they would serve that in a Willebecker style. Mm-hmm. The mug is definitely more of like a Czech pills kind of way to serve something, but I just love the way like a mug feels in your hand. It just says like, let's drink some beer, like we're here, let's drink.
Yeah, I just saw a picture of Pilsner Urquell with different foam levels and in the mug. It's like all of those look
Milko
pretty amazing,
and then the half, and yeah, I mean the foam is a flavor. It's a different, again, like a lot of people think these might be gimmicky, but I don't look at it that way. I mean, you can make it a gimmick. I mean, that's the thing. You can make it a gimmick. It's like every single bottle of wine, you know, the guy coming over to you, or the waiter or the waitress coming over to you and giving it to the man to smell and taste the first sip after they've uncorked it. You know, like some of that is a gimmick. Well, like on a really nice bottle of wine, maybe that's not a gimmick, right? It is solidified in something, but I guess I don't know enough about wine. I'd drink it and be like, yeah, it's fine. It's alcohol, right? Like, it'll give me a hangover probably.
So I got to ask, does Fogo de Chao still have your beer on tap?
They do, and it's one of the hardest ones to get them to get it right, man. Because we want to do educate, right? Can't just not. And I really want to see, there's restaurants like Elway's, Shanahan's, and Ruth Chris. Like, you can't get a beer that's not in a shaker pint there. It's amazing to me that, again, you can have a cheap, shitty bottle of wine, and they'll polish that glass within an inch of its life, and still any beer comes in a shaker pint because it's just beer.
Yeah.
And I don't know why we haven't made it further, considering, you know, craft beer now, again, we're like the second real generation of drinking craft beer. You know, it's not as niche as it once was. You know what I mean? It's not as nerdy as it once was. You can't literally go almost anywhere and not get at least one or two options for, you know, craft, even if that craft is like Sam Adams or something, right? Like, you can't go anywhere without that. I mean, if it were such a small quantity of people, then why is Coors and all those people running out to go, you know, find a new little small brand that they can put on tap?
Yeah. Yep. I am in full agreement. Well, I'm out of questions. Is there anything that you would want people to know about Bierstadt or your beer that we haven't got to?
I don't know. I think not a lot. I mean, I'm really passionate about like what we do here, about beer styles, about how we do it. I think you should drink what you like. I would never tell you not to drink it. Like, if you want to drink milkshake IPA, like, you should do it. I always try to tell, hopefully brewers listen, just make what you want to make. If you're not proud of it, don't put it out. Like, I'm kind of tired of the people out there that are treating customers like they're stupid and treating customers like they'll drink anything. And so they just do it to get a rise out of people. If you're really passionate about making milkshake IPA or whatever it is, or you should make it. Like, it's not my business model. Like, I don't have to answer for it. It's not my bank loan. Like, you should do it. Like, you should do what you want to do, but I think you should want to do it. And so I think you should drink what you want to drink. But, you know, try some different things out there. Give a whole beer a chance. Stop drinking in samples. Drink some more lager. They're not all bad. They're great. And that's it. And treat people good.
Right on. Well, thank you for taking the time and doing this after, especially after.
Oh, it's fine. I wish I was just like, I was like running around today. I was a crazy lady.
All right. Another interview in the books with a brewery I never thought I'd be talking to, which is kind of a common sentiment on this show, especially the next couple months. And proves that whole idea that craft beer is very open and accepting and collaborative, which itself is an idea that we can carry and discuss into next week's episode. So keep that in mind, as it'll be a bit of a different conversation from the normal brewery stuff. But I hope you stick around because it's an important one. So more of that next week. Thanks again to Ashley Carter for taking the time to talk all things Bierstadt. Thought I was going to get to Denver last year. That didn't exactly go as planned, like everything else in the world. And unfortunately, the festival again this year is going to be virtual, but that's probably the right call because that would just be a mess. So maybe 2022. I'll see you there. Next week, another interview episode. A little bit different take on craft beer industry and some of the conversations going on around that. But I'm excited for that one, so stay tuned. Don't forget to check out Beer Truth Podcast on Facebook, on Instagram, fans only. Yeah, whatever that means. That's it. Till next week. Thanks for tuning in. And till the next round. Sláinte.